Did you know that the original Final Fantasy creator, Hironobu Sakaguchi, made a spiritual successor to that legendary series called Fantasian for Apple Arcade, and every level in the game is a handmade, physical miniature model? Enjoy unlimited access to over 200 incredibly fun games with no ads and no in-app purchases. From puzzle and adventure games to sports, racing, and multiplayer action games, everyone can count on finding something to love. Head to sifter.com.au/arcade to start your free trial of Apple Arcade today. That's sifter.com.au/arcade for a 1 month free trial of Apple Arcade, and you'll be supporting independent video games journalism. This offer is for new subscribers only. $9.99 a month after free trial. Plan automatically renews after trial until cancelled.
Chris, people are real horny for this one. They are real horny for it. And Kyle, who doesn't spend as much time online, seems to think that I'm the one who's going on about this all the time. But it's definitely not me. All you need to do is go to the Steam page and look at the community and just have a bit of a squiz through there. What do you have to say to that?
The amount of fan art and thirsty posting for all of the characters here is, yeah, through the roof. And this was the same for the first game as well, because, and I think this was something that was very deliberate by Supergiant, you know, not from a, oh, let's, you know, make all of our characters as impossibly hot as possible to appeal to people on the internet. They're like, these are gods. These are Olympian gods and deities. They are, you know, meant to be like the best looking beings, you know, in existence.
Sifter.com.au.
G'day, I'm Chris Button, and this is Drop Rate, Sifter's video game review podcast. Hades 2, the sequel to the widely beloved Godlike, has arrived in early access, bringing with it a whole new setting, fresh characters, and entirely different ways to unleash godly pain. But does it hold a candle to the original? First, let's check out the latest headlines from Walkthrough, Sifter's weekly news podcast.
Hi, I'm Gianni DiGiovanni.
And I'm Fiona Bartholomaeus.
And here are the top stories this week on Walkthrough, Sifter's weekly news podcast for Sunday, 16th of June.
We wrap the big showcases Xbox, Ubisoft, Devolver, and share our favourites.
The next Dragon Age game has a new name and a new trailer. We discuss The Veil Guard.
Xbox has hinted again that they are working on a handheld device.
And beloved Australian indie studio League of Geeks is shutting down all projects and are now on hiatus.
You can get every episode of Walkthrough for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, or on our website sifter.com.au every Sunday.
Join the Sifter community on Discord at sifter.com.au/Discord.
So Gianni, Hades 2, it's now in early access and everyone's going wild about it, the very hotly anticipated sequel to the first game. So let's unpack what actually is Hades 2 and how does it follow on from the incredibly popular first game?
Hotly anticipated. Am I right, Kyle Paletto, in specifics? Yes, Hades 2 is a roguelike. It's the first direct sequel to a game by Supergiant. It is the godlike roguelike. And basically, you're kind of fighting your way through a bunch of procedurally generated worlds, trying to escape to complete a task or to go and get to a certain area. It sort of builds in complexity as you go along. And one of the benefits of this is you not only get sort of boons on each particular run, that's the powers of the gods and other characters in the world, but also there's a relatively generous sort of upgrade path as well. So you're collecting resources as you go along, and each run you get a little bit more resources, you get a bit more of the story. And one of the best things about this particular series is it doesn't feel as punishing as some other roguelikes. I feel like you're always making meaningful progress. So Hades 2 is the direct sequel to Hades. It is sort of set in the years after that game came out. You're playing as a new character called Melenawe, who is the sister of Zagreus, the character from the first game, and you're trying to find out what happened to your family after it's been locked away by the Titan of Time, Kronos. And as we say, as we're battling through Hades, Death to Kronos.
And you mentioned that one of the things that Hades, the original Hades, did really well in the roguelite genre is sort of how you don't feel completely defeated if you fail a run, or you don't manage to reach the exit or defeat whatever boss that you're up to. And I think, you know, a major part of that is its story and its very clever drip feed of key story moments and building of the characters that you come across along the way as well, so that pretty well every time you play a run in Hades, and by extension Hades 2, you're going to learn something new about the world that you're existing in, the characters that you're interacting with, and ultimately the wider and overarching plot that you're, you know, sort of playing an integral part of. And I think that's something that Hades 2 just sort of takes the ball and runs with it, taking it even further than the first, because there is more of a mystery element to it, because the way that you're placed smack bang in the middle of this sort of ongoing war against the Titan of Time, Kronos, you're trying to figure out, okay, well, how is this Titan that was supposedly locked away, sealed forever, how has he come back, and how did he manage to best your family and the supporting, many of the supporting cast of characters who were, you know, such a core part of the first game? It's so interesting to gradually reveal and unfurl this sort of complex tapestry of time, if you will, of what's happened between games. And it's something that I think Supergiant has done such a great job of sort of continuing with. And let's reiterate, this is still a game in early access, but they've sort of made it clear that there is already more in this game. There's more content, there's more sort of areas to explore, there's more weapons, there's more character dialogue than there was in the finished version of the original game. So this is no sort of, you know, teaser demo. This is quite a fully fledged experience. So how have you found Hades 2 so far, Gianni?
Well, I think the surprising moments are exactly what sort of captured me. You know, I think what Supergiant does really cleverly is that, you know, every single run you might be hitting some internal, like, I guess, check mark or whatever. And then the next time something happens and you enter somewhere, you feel like it's familiar. You've been through this place a few times, you know what it's going to be. And then it changes. And that's one of the coolest things about this. So, like, for example, you know, one of the characters who's in your home base, effectively, who you have a bit of a sort of, let's say, a bit of a tense relationship with, and you're not really sure exactly why it's so tense. You're kind of coming it with genuine earnestness. But, you know, all of a sudden, at one point, you find them on the run with you, and they're challenging you to try and complete a task. Or they might actually go and get in front and steal resources before you do as well. So that's really funny. Like, you'll end up at a shop in the game. You might have collected enough coins to buy a good upgrade, and this character will run in and buy the thing that you want to buy, and you just go, anyway. But it's so funny when things like that happen. And, you know, there's also little cutscenes that happen partway through the game as well, once you hit certain criteria as well. And so instead of when you die or when you win, something happening, you know, where you just go back to where you're supposed to be going, a cutscene triggers and you get a bit more of the story, and you get put into the control of characters that we've never had control of as well. So, you know, there's really interesting aspects to way that they've changed the gameplay from run to run. And that's why it's just like, they've done such a clever job. I'm normally not the sort of person who is so obsessed with these sorts of games, where I'm just committed to getting the best run. I'm not a score attack person. I really don't have that in me at all. But because you get given something really interesting every time, win or lose, which is important, win or lose, you're getting something interesting every single time. It's so compelling to keep revisiting, to keep running through. And as you said, the size of this game is really big. So, you know, in the original Hades, there was one major run you could do. You're trying to escape from Hades, from the underworld, to get to the surface to find out what's going on. And in this one, you can not only try to fight your way into the bowels of the underworld. You can also go on your way to Mount Olympus as well. So, you know, it's actually two separate runs with slightly different mechanics and slightly different environments to explore. So, you know, that actually has already doubled it, not to mention that a lot of the combat abilities have changed. The way that Milenoway plays is quite different in comparison to Zagreus. But yeah, there's lots there that just rewards you. You just feel like you're getting rewards all the time. And then I think that's why this game has had such a beautiful place in the hearts of many players who would never think themselves roguelike players.
And you touch on how the way Milenoway plays and sort of the combat as well. And I think that's a really interesting difference between Hades 1 and Hades 2, because in the original game, playing as Zagreus, he's this scrappy fighter, you know, very much a melee fighter, although there are certainly weapons that favour range and distance and agility. But the way that Milenoway plays, she's still quite zippy and agile, but because she's more of a witch and a magic wielder than Zagreus's sort of hand-to-hand or sword-to-sword combat, she does play substantially and tangibly different. So the actual act of playing Hades 2, while it feels familiar in terms of the controls and the way that a lot of the things handle, she does play very differently in a very satisfying way. The first run that you play as Milenoway, she is using this big witch staff, this stave, where, you know, she's quite good from a distance, and, you know, not as strong perhaps in close range, and not quite as quick in terms of her dash and sprint don't feel quite as quick as Zagreus. So there is an adjustment period if you are coming from the first game, jumping into Hades 2, that, yes, you know, a lot of the maneuvers will feel, you know, quite familiar, but you do need to adjust to the tangibly different way that Milenoway plays. And of course, like the first game, you gradually gain resources to unlock things at the home base, which also includes new and different weapons, all of which drastically change the feel and the experience of fighting and sort of blasting your way through these denizens of mythological enemies. So that's something that's, you know, been really satisfying to, you know, try, you know, this staff that very much favors ranged and sort of mid-range magical attacks, versus, you know, you can unlock this big honking axe, which is very much a, you know, melee close range, very slow and methodical weapon, but, you know, you're rewarded with devastating amounts of damage if you're able to, you know, really nail the timing and master the feel. So yeah, I think that's something that I've really enjoyed from Hades 2, is that I don't know who I prefer to play as more. I think, you know, Zagreus and Milenoway are both very fun characters to play as in different ways, but I've really taken to the way that Supergiant has designed Milenoway as a character, you know, from a playable perspective. And I'd like to know, Gianni, how have you found the combat and the way that Milenoway plays, and has there been a weapon that you've sort of gravitated towards so far?
Yeah, well, you know what I think is really interesting, because the first game, I think I mostly would stick to a single button. It's a fast game. You basically are smashing buttons repeatedly in order to try and do as much damage as possible, and then you'd be dashing around to try and keep away from damage as it hits you. So, you know, that was probably my main tactic. And what I found the main difference between this one is because Milenoway has such interesting utility, she's got really good, she's got a big, like, casting spell, basically, which catches enemies in that and holds them in place. And if you hold it down, you actually expend a bit of magic, which we did kind of have in the first one, but and that actually increases the damage that does, or it gives an extra effect, or all of those sort of stuff, and that can be buffed as well. So, like, that can be part of your strategy. So I found that I was mixing between sort of the special attack, which is often the sort of more ranged attack, the X attack, which was more the standard normal attack, close range attack, and moving between those different abilities as I was going through. I think it's interesting you talking about how, like, you know, because she's a witch, and I remember I saw a reviewer say that, you know, this game has got a very deep feminine power, which I think is kind of cool. And it's definitely the vibe of the world is really, really interesting. But for me, I think, you know, I really loved the speedy attacks. That's what I would led myself towards. You know, I would mix it up when there were bonuses to use other weapons on the abilities. So you can get an increased sort of resource. It's sort of minor, but it does help if you're trying to get towards something a little bit quicker. But, you know, there was a couple of blades which we see in the trailer for this game, and I really leant towards those because I could just increase my damage output on that so high. And then what is really cool is each of the weapons, you can often find modifiers for how those weapon abilities work. So that's on top of giving them a magical power. So you might want to have a lightning bolt attack for whenever you do it and cause it to get it to cause chain lightning, so it's attacking multiple enemies around you. But you can also say, okay, well, I'm going to give up my spell, which is the really high powered hold down the button cast a spell attack, for being able to hold down the button and have it just blast at super speed. So, you know, there's lots of different variables in the way that you do it. And I think what's really cool is you get into like a nice pattern where you go, okay, well, I'm going through and I'm presented with a few options as I move through each of the different little arenas and the little sub-levels of the main over-level. And okay, well, I've got a few good buffs for damage. And what I'm really looking for now is I really want to sort of augment my attack. So I'm going to go towards the Daedalus Hammer because I want that ability there. Or I can see Daedalus is actually one of the other characters, and that often also changes a bit of the abilities as well. And then sort of stacking utility as well. So, you know, there's infusions which rely on each of the boons have an elemental power. And, you know, you might think, okay, Poseidon's definitely going to be all water-based, and Poseidon mostly is water-based. But if you pick Aphrodite, for example, quite a few of Aphrodite's powers have water. So you can set it so that if you have a number of water powers in a particular run, it can increase your health. So, like, you're making all of these sorts of different choices based on what has come across you, and it really encourages you to try different bits and pieces. I don't know about you, Chris. There's definitely been runs where I'm like, God, just nothing good is coming up, and you get towards the end and it feels pretty punishing. But sometimes you get a dream run and you just hit everything you want. And I wonder if there's like an invisible hand of the developer in there somewhere, which is actually helping you as you go along. So if you have a bit of a few bad runs, then you get a few more beneficial boons as it goes along. I don't know. Was that your feeling? Was there a godly power in there that was pushing us along?
Yeah, I don't know. I certainly encountered a few runs where, especially when I was getting close to the end of a run, I was thinking, geez, I feel like I'm pretty light on with some of my abilities and my augments here. I'm not sure how I'm going to go. But, it's very possible, because a lot of these developers are very clever with the way that they sort of, you know, invisibly massage some of the behind the scenes, you know, RNG or the rate at which things appear. So, you know, I'm not dismissing it entirely, but I think, you know, like the first game, there is also the God mode setting as well for people who perhaps, you know, this genre of game isn't one that...
I highly recommend the God mode. Did you turn it on? I turned it on straight away.
No, that's not for me.
Yeah,
I was just happy that it's there.
Yeah, I turned it on straight away because I was like, you know what, I am mostly want to get through the story on this. I enjoy the run, I enjoy the combat of it, but I'm not interested this time round as bashing my head up against many levels. And because you can just get stuck with a bad run where you've just had a number of things go wrong. And the thing for me with Hades, and I passed that a few times, but I got to a point where I was just like, oh, look, I've done it so many times now, and it was a real slog to get there. So this time around, I just turned it on straight away. And, you know, for me, it was like, okay, you get a passive damage resist, and that's all it does. And it increases as you die, you get a little bit of a bonus on top of it. But for me, it also felt like, okay, because it was such a small boost as you go along, I felt my skill was improving, but also it was giving me a little bit of a helping hand as well. And it was great. You know, it's a really enjoyable way to do it. And then, I actually went back to the original Hades after I had completed what was in the early access mode of this particular one, and I turned it on straight away, and I had a few good runs from that. And it kind of, it just felt like it took a bit of the pressure off, and it's something that the game actually really strongly encourages. In fact, you know, as one of the in-game characters suggests it to you very early on, if you have a few deaths, so like, you could try it out. Why not give it a go? You're a god. Try it out. And so I think that sort of flexibility on it is, you know, its core strength. It really wants you to win. It wants you to win. And I think that's great, because that's what a lot of games could be. But for players who really want that incredible challenge, of course, they can go and give themselves a harder time of it as well. Like, for those people who really like it, they can turn off God mode, and then they also can increase the damage of every enemy. They can increase the health of every enemy. They can make it that every enemy has to take at least one hit before any damage is registered at all. Like, all of this sort of stuff can be in place in order to tailor your experience. And if you are the sort of player who is an absolute mastery player, there's lots in there for you as well. As well as for people who want to play it in a more casual way, maybe want to play it portably on Steam Deck, for example, or play it on the Switch, where I presume it will come to the Switch or Switch 2 when that comes out. You know, so there's a lot there in it, and I think that's really, really cool.
And I think that that's, you know, such a great point as well, and something that the original Hades did so well, and, you know, by virtue, Hades 2 as well, that God mode in particular, I never felt compelled to use it. I think that's, you know, also a personal preference as well, because, you know, I, like yourself, I'm not someone who's interested in chasing, you know, high scores or time attacks or that sort of stuff. That's not what motivates me in video games, and that's not what I enjoy about video games. I do enjoy the challenge aspect, but more like the internal challenge of sort of beating my own sort of, you know, best sort of runs and that sort of thing. And my partner used God mode, and she found that to be, you know, a brilliant feature that totally, you know, improved the enjoyment that she was having with the game, you know, tenfold. But I think for me, you know, because this is a genre of game that I enjoy, and, you know, I wouldn't go as far to say that this is like a bullet hell game, but there are bullet hell elements to it, and that's something that I really enjoy in some games. You know, I never felt compelled to use it, and I never felt that I was having a lesser or worse time by not using the God mode. And I think that's, you know, such a great sort of testament to the quality of the design of this game, is that, you know, you're not necessarily having a drastically different time whether you use God mode or you don't use it. And, you know, I think the other big thing for me is that even when I wasn't, you know, playing terribly well or had a few runs that, you know, ended in defeat, you know, sort of consecutively, I never felt like I was banging my head against a brick wall because of just how well this game was designed, how good each of the encounters felt. And it felt like whenever I wasn't able to defeat a boss or an enemy, or I, you know, managed to slip up, it felt like it was entirely on me, even when I felt like I had a suboptimal build in terms of the Olympian boons or the items or whatever I collected along the way. You know, I still felt like, oh, it's on me to do the most I can with what I have. And I feel like at every encounter, even if it's a build that I don't particularly like, I still felt, you know, reasonably well equipped to succeed. But yeah, again, it's again down to player preference, and the fact that, you know, such an option or a toggle is there is, you know, great for allowing more people to enjoy the game in the way that they want to play, which is fantastic.
Yeah, and I mean, with the boons as well, for example, like if the bullet hell bit of it is annoying to you, which I've often find bullet hell kind of annoying because it's just about being in the right mode and you're actually looking at all those bits and pieces, there's boons that you can get which can just negate the bullets effectively. You race around, negate the bullets, and actually do a tiny bit of like scorch damage to your enemy as well. So like, that's cool as well. Like, you know, there's plenty of options for you to adjust the way that you want to play, and that's why it's really, really cool in all of those sorts of bits and pieces, because it just feels like there's plenty of opportunities there for you to have a great time.
Yeah, or even you can at some point recruit your froggy companion to join you, and he will block bullets for you. It's great. You know, you've got this big frog friend who, you know, comes along, you know, croaks and rivets their way through levels and blocks bullets for you. So, which is great. But I think it's also, you know, got to mention Darren Korb, the musical genius behind these games, has once again done a fabulous job of composing the music for for Hades 2. And without giving too much away, there is a boss encounter that's not too deep within a run that has a couple of very catchy tunes and songs that elevate that boss encounter to like another level. It's great fun.
That builds across the whole level as well. Like it builds as you get in there, it's very slow, you're far distance, you're getting close to the end, to the final boss in there, and it layers upon layers get built up over time. And it's really great. Like you kind of get those very early verses and then you kind of get to the chorus almost when you get there, when you get to the final boss in that level. And it's so fun. And there's a few different songs and you can hear different songs as you go. And I imagine we're only in early access at the moment. That's something they're probably going to change as they go along too. So, you know, there's so much cool stuff. And I tell you what, once you've cleared a room and then it's just kind of slap bass background music, oh, mate, that is so good. I love that moment. It's kind of incredible scene setting with music. You kind of just love just sitting there hearing what's going on. And that was true of the first game as well, but it's something else in this one.
Yeah, that reactive sound design is something else. The way that the music ramps up when you're in the combat encounter and seamlessly sort of eases off, you know, sort of the calm before the storm again in between encounters. It's so good and so clever. And I was listening to the original soundtrack just the other day, and in particular the song that plays during your encounter with the eponymous Hades character, which is such a heavy, you know, hard-hitting track, and it's so clever how, you know, how good it sounds as a standalone song, but when you're in the encounter and the way that it reacts to what stage you are of the fight in terms of how much health, you know, the boss has left, it's so clever. And, you know, Hades by no means is not the first game to do such a thing, but it certainly does it among the best I've, you know, encountered in, you know, any game that I've played, which is wonderful. But you mentioned, you know, we are in early access here with Hades 2. So I think it's important to touch on sort of, okay, what is the state of the game at the moment and what are we expecting in the future? So, you know, at the moment with how it is in early access, you'll notice not all of the character portraits or character artworks are or sort of finalized, and there's some like environment art that you can see is sort of still in like a sketch like sort of phase that hasn't had like a final pass on it. And there is, you know, one area that's not yet complete, so you do get a message when you go to a certain point of the game saying, hey, this is where
an in-game message, which is really cool. Like it actually is part of the world, and then you go back and actually, you know, they said time is what we need to, we're playing in the world of time here and we just need to wait a little bit more. And it's like, that's just cool world building for players who are playing it in early access as well. Don't you reckon that's like kind of incredible? If you play this game when it launches at retail, you're going to miss all those little moments, and that's like one of the benefits of playing it in early access.
Well, that's the thing, is that I really wrestled internally with the concept of, do I actually jump in now in early access, which I didn't with the original, or do I wait for the full game? Because, you know, when the original Hades launched in early access, I think as like an Epic Game Store exclusive at the time, I can't quite remember, but there was a lot of buzz around the time saying, hey, this is pretty damn good. And I think, you know, there was only like one or two areas to start with, and then they gradually built on that. And for me, I thought, yeah, I'll wait. But I think because of how much I enjoyed the original Hades, and when I read that, oh, there's already more stuff in here than there was in the original game, and we're still in early access, I thought, yeah, I'm not going to wait. I'm going to see what happens here. And I remember reading an article, and I wish I remember who wrote it. They were saying that, you know, one of the best parts of playing this game or the original Hades in early access was seeing sort of how narratively it sort of played with the idea that this was a game in flux and that there was still stuff to come. And I think with Hades 2, it's even more thematically appropriate given that the big bad is Kronos, the Titan of Time. So it does play with the concept of time and sort of linear or not so linear progression. So, you know, for me, obviously people have different motivations or different desires from what they want to see out of playing a game or a finished product versus early access. But for me, this is a game. If you are remotely interested, just jump in. You are not getting a lesser experience by playing in early access. This is incredible. It's absolutely incredible.
I want to come back to people's desires and people's attractions in this game in a moment.
But
I do think it's interesting as well when we look at a game like this, which is so developed in early access. It does sort of, you know, there's always an argument to be made that the idea of what an early access game is kind of a bit nebulous, right? And a small indie team that's working on this on their early access title is not going to be the same scale as Supergiant working on an early access game, which has had a previous game and all of that sort of stuff. So it's always an interesting thing to consider. I agree with you 100%. I think there's a lot here to enjoy, and people who play through what's in the game currently will get a lot out of it for sure. And you probably will get your money's worth for sure, or whatever it is, right? But I think it's interesting to say that, okay, this is an early access, which is, you know, very far along the line. You know, they have all their core systems in place, and what they're doing now is they're polishing the art and they're polishing a few of the systems and tuning the systems based on player feedback versus something that is, like, you know, much earlier in its development stages and, you know, is much more placeholder in many circumstances as well. So, you know, I think it's one of those things where, like, you need to, I want people to kind of give companies the grace that they give Supergiant, right? Where they go, okay, if smaller teams, if they're doing an early access for a smaller team looks very different to what Supergiant does, but, you know, let's, you know, be kind of cognizant that they are at completely different scales, and this is a very, very interesting game. Anyway, let's talk about the characters and everything in it, because Chris, people are real horny for this one. They are real horny for it, and Kyle, who doesn't spend as much time online, seems to think that I'm the one who's going on about this all the time, but it's definitely not me. All you need to do is go to the Steam page and look at the community and just have a bit of a squiz through there. What do you have to say to that?
My partner, she is a Tumblrina, spends a lot of time on Tumblr, and, you know, for anyone who knows what Tumblr's like, it is, you know, fandom heaven or hell, you know, depending on what discussions are going on. And between X, between Tumblr, between insert social platform here, the amount of fan art and thirsty posting for all of the characters here is through the roof. And this was the same for the first game as well, because and I think this was something that was very deliberate by Supergiant, you know, not from let's, you know, make all of our characters as impossibly hot as possible to appeal to people on the internet. They're like, these are gods, these are Olympian gods and deities. They are, you know, meant to be like the best looking beings, you know, in existence. And my word, is that continued here and then some in Hades too. Like Aphrodite, you mentioned Aphrodite, you know, the goddess of love and desire and that sort of thing. And she, her character art in the first game was already very let's say appealing.
It was suggestive, shall we say, and this one is even more suggestive.
Yes, absolutely. And you referenced the character not by name earlier, who Milinawe has a somewhat adversarial relationship with, and, you know, this particular character, you know, is very, you know, muscle bound and, you know, replete with, you know, sort of battle armor and everything. And, you know, you go online and people are, you know, thirsting over the battle mommy and you know, all of these characters as well. So, you know, and, you know, yeah, we're obviously fixating on the women. I think, yeah, a couple of pretty straight dudes. Obviously, that's what appeals to our preferences. But yeah, there's some absolute beefcakes of men in this game as well. So there's something for everyone.
Yeah, one of the funniest things that's like I've seen is this is the bisexual delight. You know, anyone who you've got, there's plenty on the menu, just like the choices of boons and all that sort of thing. If you enjoy the fun of it, it's just like, I think it's a bit of a silly fun thing, and I think the fans kind of get into it, and it's kind of a bit memey and all that sort of stuff. But yeah, it's interesting, and I think it's games like this live and die on the players and the fans, and, you know, this sort of stuff and the incredible writing and all of that really contributes to a world that people just actually fall in love with. And that's the thing about Hades too. You know, a game that is mostly on the way there isn't there yet, but people are already so captured by it. And I always look at games, especially games that are coming out or games that are in early access or anything like that, and just look for fan art, look for because that is for me a huge indication that this is a cultural item. This is something that has made an impact and people are spending their spare time to contribute to that cultural conversation. And that's where Hades 2 is. Hades 1 was the same. But you know, you may not be as thirsty as some of these fan artists, but you should really go and have a look at some of this stuff, especially on the Steam page, which is generally pretty safe, you know, because, you know, you can see the love for people and the character creation, the world creation that has come from this. And you can see some very genuine, incredible creativity as well.
And if you've got a video game or pop culture convention coming up in your local area, expect to see plenty of cosplays in the next 6 to 12 plus months. You know, really looking forward to seeing the Melina Way cosplays, because there were plenty of Zagreus cosplays and still are plenty of Zagreus cosplays. And I'm particularly looking forward to people's cosplay takes on Hecate, the witch that sort of mentors Melita Way, because she has such an intricate outfit and intricate character design. And again, yeah, Supergiant have just, you know, knocked it out of the park with these character designs. And you know, there are still, you know, half a dozen, if not more, characters that have incomplete art or placeholder art as it is. So, you know, we're still going to be, you know, treated with these brilliant and, you know, wonderfully designed sort of works of art in the months to come as it progresses through early access.
Narcissus is in the game. It's not a huge spoiler, but Narcissus has placeholder art at the moment. And let me tell you, when Narcissus gets into the game, I can imagine the fandom will go pretty wild. Or maybe they won't. I don't know. I'm just surprised to see what'll happen.
Yeah, yeah. And this is a game. One of the buzzwords here in the indie games industry in recent years is, you know, a lot of developers seek to surprise and delight players. And I think if there's a game that surprises and delights players, it's Hades and Hades 2. It just has it in spades. It has such a great, you know, sense of being, sense of, you know, purpose, and, you know, just... Oh, it's just such a great example of what is possible with game development as a medium and as, you know, as an artistic form of expression as well. It's incredible. So that of course leaves us to a sort of concluding statement in terms of, you know, this game is in early access, but there's plenty here to make, you know, some pretty you know, definitive statements on. Gianni, do you drop or rate Hades 2?
So I'm going to do something interesting. I'm going to rate it as an overall thing, but at the moment I'm dropping it because I've literally reached the end of what I can do in the particular game, and I've reached the end of the story. I've done everything I can do. So definitely, if you are unlike me and only have a little bit of time to play, you will get heaps out of this. But if you're like me and have put 20-something plus hours into this game, at the moment you'll hit a wall eventually. But I think that's part of it. I think that's part of the early access journey. You're going to have to get to a point and put it down and play some other stuff for a while. But definitely one of the most interesting games, builds on most of the systems in the first game in a really clever and various ways to make for something that's really fun. And there's a reason why Hades is held up as a game that's genre defining. And Hades 2 goes and improves on that in just about every single way.
I absolutely concur with the rating, although I won't be dropping it at this point because I am 30 plus hours in and I've still got many things to unlock and things I want to try with various combos in Hades 2. So I think if I haven't already, I'm very close to surpassing the amount of hours that I put into the original game, which I really enjoyed as well. But yeah, Hades 2 is incredible. I will be playing it, you know, all throughout early access and can't wait to see what Supergiant do from here.
Hey Hey there, Gianni here on the latest episode of Lightmap Sifter's interview podcast. Cade Franklin from Spitfire Interactive joins me to share Capes, a superhero tactics game where teaming up with your allies makes all the difference.
It's set in a world where the supervillains have defeated the superheroes 20 years ago. And since then, developing superpowers is outlawed. So as a player, you're one of the superheroes who was meant to be dead from 20 years ago has returned to the city. And he's starting to recruit a group of young superheroes to band together and fight back. I guess XCOM is the most obvious thing that people go, oh, it's a bit like XCOM. If you're familiar with Chimera Squad, XCOM Chimera Squad, it's closer to that, where there are kind of set heroes and there are missions that you go on.
You can get every episode of Lightmap for free on Apple Podcasts, on Spotify, on YouTube. Head to our website, sifter.com.au, or wherever you like to listen.
Sit down for a chat with your pals in video games.
You're listening to Sifter.
This has been Drop Rate by Sifter, a video game review podcast. Thanks to Brian Fairbanks from Salty Dog Sounds for composing the theme music. Sifter is produced by Chris Button, Courtney Barrett, Kyle Poletto, Fiona Bartholomaeus, Daniel Ang, and Adam Christo. Mitch Lowe is senior producer, and Gianni DiGiovanni is our executive producer. That's all for this week. Follow Sifter on TikTok to keep up with the biggest stories in video games, and visit sifter.com.au for written coverage. Plus, you can check out our other podcast, Lightmap, where we talk to game developers, creatives, and people who are doing cool things in interactive media on your favorite podcast app of choice. Thanks for joining us. See you next time.